better than this? Guys, me and dudes here on the Draft Dudes podcast, presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this Friday edition of the show. Draft Dudes is brought to you by Built Bar. Remember, promo code Locked On gets you $10 off your first order over at BuiltBar.com. Kyle, happy Friday. Let's tie a ribbon on this series.
Yeah, we're going to have an ugly conversation here to start things off.
Oh, well, yeah. Adam Gase, New York Jets.
Do we want to give a quick recap of what we've done thus far for anybody who missed it?
Sure.
Okay, hold on. Deep breath. Cliff Kingsbury, John Harbaugh, Sean McDermott, Matt Rhule, Kevin Stefanski, Mike McCarthy, Matt LaFleur, Frank Reich, Andy Reid, John Gruden, Sean McVay, Brian Flores, Brian Belichick, Sean Payton, and Joe Judge. Those coaches, in our opinion, have varying degrees of ice-cold seats. Their jobs are not in jeopardy in 2020. Dan Quinn, Matt Nagy, Zach Taylor, Bill O'Brien currently have toasty seats. They're warm. They're not the hottest they could be, but they're still warm. Vic Fangio, Anthony Lynn, Mike Zimmer have lukewarm seats. They're fairly safe. They got some good things going for them. But if they have a disaster in 2020, we could see their teams prompted to make a change. And Matt Patricia and Doug Marrone are currently our two hottest seats. But I have a feeling that is going to change.
Yeah. Well, Adam Gase is first up today. New York Jets. Three consecutive losing seasons as a head coach. Some really questionable relationships with players that he's moved on from. You look at a lot of players before Gase and after Gase and how different their careers look. You may like some things about this New York Jets football team. They finished 6-2 down the stretch last year after a 1-7 start. Maybe they didn't improve the offensive line like you think they should have, but it's improved. There's better weapons. They're healthy on defense. There's upgrades in the secondary, but Adam Gase is the head coach of this New York Jets football team, and I think that's a hurdle for them to overcome.
This 6-2 is the most hollow accomplishment I've ever seen. Did you look at the games they won at the end of the year?
Beat NFL football teams.
Okay, so they beat the Dolphins 22-21. After a very gracious defensive pass interference call extended their last drive and allowed them to kick a game-winning field goal at the end of the game. They had 259 yards of total offense and 16 points to beat the Steelers 16-10. And they beat the Jets week 17, who sat like six or seven significant starters. And, by the way, also in that 6-2 stretch were wins over the Redskins and Giants.
What is the stat about? He has like 25 losses by double digits. Like 24 career wins and 25 losses by double digits.
Yes.
Why is Scott even higher? He's at 26. As of December 12th, 2019, he has 26 losses by double digits. So he has more losses by double digits in his career than he does wins.
Well, what's his win total at? He's got 30 total wins.
All right. As of December 12th, he had 26 double digit losses.
Oh, and that's he went 3-1 in his final.
So there you go. That helped
games,
him a lot.
So, and those were the three games. So listen, you talked about shuttling away talented players because you can't deal with them. We didn't even talk about Kelechi Osemele, right? And that whole train wreck where he needed shoulder surgery, and you know the team said he didn't, and then they asked Adam Gase about it, and he's like, I haven't talked to him. He's in the training room. I got meetings. I've got a bunch of guys that are actually playing every week that need me to do my job. If he wants to come talk to me, he can come to my office. Constantly passing the buck. This team doesn't do anything good, Joe. They were the fifth most penalized team in the NFL in yardage in 2019, and they were ninth in 2018 in penalty yardage, but only 15 yards away from being fifth again. And then they were the second most penalized team in 2017. No matter what his roster is, his offense can't move the ball. He plays undisciplined. He takes no accountability for anything. And he was the team's third choice.
Yet he's been an NFL head coach for the last 4 years.
It's incredible.
Well, what's also dynamic to consider here is Joe Douglas didn't hire Adam Gase. So that makes it bumpy to begin with. Obviously a toasty seat here, Kyle. Or not toasty, sizzling hot.
This is the hottest seat in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because it was November in Gase's first year, and Jets fans were wondering, when are they going to fire Gase?
Yeah. So, well, we'll see if he makes it through the year.
This team lost to Cincinnati and Miami and should have been swept by Miami last year.
It's the first win for both
teams.
Yeah. And the 5-11 and 2-14 team last year.
Right. Right. And they should have been swept by the Dolphins.
Yeah. They got that big win against the Bills' third stringers in week 17, though. That should really carry them into...
Right, really established a lot of momentum going into next year. Their weird win was they did play really well against Dallas and beat Dallas by 2 points.
That was with, Luke Falk at quarterback, too, early in the year, right? I'm pretty sure that's the case. Some quarterback just like that.
Were playing with Luke Falk, but I don't remember if Darnold was out at that point, because that was an early game.
Darnold played week one. Yeah, and that was it. So I don't think Darnold played in that game. I think that was Luke Falk.
No, Darnold played in this game.
Did he really? So it must have been his first game back?
This was his first game back.
Oh, okay. All right.
They were winless at 0-4. They beat the Cowboys to move to 1-4. Darnold threw for 338 yards.
Wow. Good for you, Sam. I think that's my biggest concern with Adam Gase is I like Sam Darnold, and I don't know that he's going to reach his potential with Gase.
Right. Well, I don't think there's any question that you're handcuffing a young quarterback with Adam Gase. So, hottest seat in the NFL.
All right, let's move on to Doug Peterson. Philadelphia Eagles, 42-27 since becoming the head coach in 2016. Super Bowl championship under his belt. 2 NFC East championships. 3 playoff appearances. I think
3 consecutive playoff appearances.
Is that so? He missed it the first year and then went 3 straight.
Yep, they went 7-9, 13-3, 9-7, 9-7.
Congratulations! You love the innovative offense that he runs. A lot of different personnel groupings, a lot of versatile skill sets. I think Jim Schwartz hanging on there could be challenging if Jim Schwartz is so married to being +1 in the box that he leaves talented or corners that don't have the talent to play on an island. So I think Schwartz is going to have to evolve because that almost killed that team last year. But, I think Peterson's pretty safe, to be honest with you, with the success. I mean, he won a Super Bowl with the Eagles relatively recently. I couldn't see a scenario where he's not back.
No. And I know Eagles fans get impatient, right? And I live in the greater Philadelphia area, so I'm exposed to the temperature of Philly. And they just love to, Eagles fans have a lot of that, what-if mentality, where we're still married to Nick Foles, and we should have kept Nick Foles, and, I saw something come through on my timeline the other day talking about this, about how signing Wentz, committing to Wentz was this massive mistake, where you could have had a better, more clutch, healthier quarterback, and I anticipate if the Eagles linger around 500 again, you'll start to see some of that with Doug Peterson. And the Monday sports talk radio in Philadelphia after an Eagles loss is the most insufferable thing I've ever heard in my life. So Eagles fans, I hope that if the team starts slow or if they linger around 500 through November, but they're in a position to make a run to get in the postseason, don't lose patience in your head coach. Because I know a ton of teams that would kill to have won 13-9-9, win the division twice, win a Super Bowl over the course of the last 3 years.
Very forward-thinking, too, with his approach. So.
Yep. The Eagles had a lot of injuries last year with the wide receiver room and were really tested with their depth. So Doug Peterson's fine. I think this is an ice-cold seat.
Speaking of ice-cold, Pittsburgh Steelers, Mike Tomlin, 13 seasons, never had a below 8-8 year. Super Bowl win. They've won the division. Well, not the last 2 years, but how many division champions? Six in 13 years. AFC Norths won the conference twice. I mean, I think you know what this man can do as your head coach. I mean, last year to lose Ben early on and play, Mason Rudolph, Duck Hodgins, still get that team to an 8-8 record. He's got his own issues with with I think some game day management, but man, like in terms of being an inspiring leader, like he might be the best in football, and he's managed some really difficult personalities throughout his time with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We think about the whole list of guys that have come through there that like were train wrecks after being in Pittsburgh, but he kept that thing together. Like Tomlin's a good head football coach. I mean, unless they're just bored with him in Pittsburgh, I'd be surprised if there was a different guy roaming the sidelines beyond this year.
There have been three Pittsburgh Steelers head coaches since the Nixon administration. Three. Joe, how far back do you have to go to get three Buffalo Bills head coaches?
Oh, man, like 2016?
Okay, so the Trump administration?
Was that when he started?
Yeah, 16 to 20, yeah.
All right. So then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Steelers are the gold standard for longevity. And, you know, Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, Mike Tomlin. Tomlin is only 48 years old, Joe. He is the NFL's best chance, Bill Belichick aside. You know, Bill Belichick's running up against the end of it. Mike Tomlin is the NFL's current best chance to threaten the NFL's head coaching all-time wins record. And you don't, you know, cut players or coaches like that. You don't move on from coaches like that, especially when they performed as well as they did with the circumstances that the Pittsburgh offense had to battle through last year, Joe, because it wasn't just Big Ben. Like, James Conner was hurt for a significant amount of the year. Juju Smith-Schuster had a down year. They had to evolve their passing offense without Antonio Brown in 2019. So lots of changes, 8-8, still survived. I think Pittsburgh is a big bounce-back team this year.
Yeah, remember, I think I picked him to win the North last year. And obviously,
you did.
You know, Ben going down didn't help that. But if Ben's around, they well, I mean, Baltimore was so good last year. But
yeah
they would have been better than 8-8.
Yeah, they probably would have been like 10-6.
Ice cold, right?
Ice cold.
All right, you know what's not ice cold is my feelings about Built Bar. It's the best tasting protein bar that I've ever had, Kyle. The flavor variety is off the charts. You can have chocolate chip cookie dough. You can have mint brownie, peanut butter brownie, whatever you want. Raspberry chocolate, orange chocolate. They're all delicious. Coconut almond. And they taste good. Flavor variety's there. And the texture and consistency is just like eating a candy bar. You're not like chewing on leather. You don't have this chalky aftertaste in your mouth where you feel like you got to like immediately rinse it out with water because you want to get your protein in for the day. These things are something you're going to find yourself going back to the box and eating multiple per day because they're so good and they're so good for you. Low calories, like 110 to 150 per bar. Compared to other protein bars, it's 7 times fewer carbs and sugar grams, but more protein. They're all covered in real chocolate. It doesn't even make sense that they can taste this good and be that good for you. We've got a deal for you. Go over to BuiltBar.com. Use our promo code LOCKEDON. You get $10 off your first order. Let Kyle and I know which flavors you like the best. And I think when it's all said and done, you'll also agree with me that this is the best tasting protein bar that you've ever had. Kyle Shanahan time. This guy can coach football, man. Things were rough the first 2 years in San Francisco. Injuries killed the football team, but we saw the full scope of what this man can do last year with a really dynamic offense, very creative, a lot of motion, a lot of really creative ways to get the football into the hands of his playmakers. He knows how to scheme the run game better than any coach in the league. I mean, just he's young, he's innovative. I mean, this is a really high profile young coach in the NFL.
Yeah, this is I'm in my opinion another cold seat, despite the fact that, you know, he only recently had his breakout season in San Francisco, and you know, they couldn't seem to catch a break with Jimmy Garoppolo, and that they got Jimmy Garoppolo late in 2017 and they established all this momentum, and then he got hurt after 3 games and didn't play almost the entire season in 2018, and then he plays 16 games, they go 13-3, and I know there's still some questions about Jimmy Garoppolo's viability as a long-term answer at the quarterback position. You look from a statistics and production standpoint, and he was fine. But I know some of the, you know, how much of that is the coaching, how much of that is having the run game and an elite target in George Kittle. And, you know, we'll get all those answers. But as far as from a coaching staff perspective, like, Shanahan offensively does such a great job putting his players in positions to be successful. And his scheme is you know, they find players that fit what they're looking for to run this dynamic rushing attack. And you think about the backs that they've had at their disposal and what they all bring to the table. And man, Shanahan, with what he does with formations and personnel, and it's a really unique build in San Francisco versus what so much of the rest of the league is doing. I think that's what makes it so impressive. And then I think that's what makes him so safe, because it is such a unique way to build it, and he's doing such an amazing job of doing it.
He's 18-5. Jimmy G and Kyle Shanahan have combined for an 18-5 record in the regular season together. But Shanahan without Jimmy G is, what is that, 20 losses to 8-20 without him?
Shouldn't have picked C.J. Beathard in the third round.
Now I found Nick Mullins. But yeah, ice cold NFC champions last year. It'd be interesting to see how things go in year two. You know, the NFL is not often kind to Super Bowl teams in the following season. And so it'd be a nice challenge for this this team. But, and you got to be excited about Kyle Shanahan if you're a 49ers fan.
Yeah, man, it's one of those places that, like, you believe that coach can – that'll be an interesting topic for down the road, but, like, going into any week, I would feel good about Kyle Shanahan's ability to coach up a effective offensive game plan to beat the opposing team. Doesn't really matter what they do.
Yeah, and when that team's needed to score big points, they've done it too, you know, for the most part, so – impressive.
Freezing cold seat. So
freezing cold. Yeah.
We got one sizzling hot, three freezing colds. We're probably going to get another freezing cold here. Listen, Carter Donick, who's done some work for us over the course of the past season, wrote a really nice article, and it was rooted in, you know, whether or not the Seattle Seahawks, we're doing Pete Carroll next, are capped with their potential because of the John Schneider, Pete Carroll duo atop the organization. And Carter made the argument that yes, you know, based on Pete Carroll's affinity for establishing the run and John Schneider's tendencies as drafting, Seattle in the long term for trying to win another championship would be better served to make a regime change and let Russ cook. But I would respectfully disagree, and I don't think Pete Carroll has anything to worry about, because when you look at the Seattle Seahawks' success with Pete Carroll, this team has not had a losing season in 8 years. They've been to two Super Bowls. They have a record over the last 8 years, Joe, of 86-41-1. That is not an environment. Carter may have a point in that, could this team be better if they didn't have this kind of identity with how they draft and how they coach and how they play offense? Maybe. But at the end of the day, you're 86-41-1.
Yeah.
There's no pressure here, right?
Yeah, it's probably a historic 8-year stretch, right? I mean, like, in the grand scheme of 8-year stretches in NFL history, it's got to be up there and one of the best, right?
I could tell you Russell Wilson is tied with Tom Brady for the most wins in your first 8 seasons in the NFL for a quarterback.
I see where Carter's coming from to an extent. Could things be better around Russ Wilson? Could they have been a little bit more dynamic in how they've grown with league trends, and what would that look like? Could it have been even better? That's tough though. That's a slippery slope. It seems like the Seahawks are quite satisfied with Pete Carroll, and It sounds like he loves it. I know he's an older coach, right? I think he's one of the older ones in the game.
I think he's the second oldest coach in the NFL.
68 years old. Who's older than him? Be interesting. That's we'll go down a rabbit hole there. But yeah, he's 68, so I don't know how, you know, where he's at. He seems healthy and he loves it. But you can't argue with the success. And you know, it's interesting because we talk about innovation, and he's in a division with Shanahan, Cliff Kingsbury, and Sean McVay, right?
Like, yeah,
it's the true test of old school versus very progressive football. So yeah, I mean, for the sake of the conversation, it's ice cold. They're not going to fire Pete Carroll.
Can I give you a fun stat about Seattle in this stretch that they're on?
Please.
So Pete Carroll took over in 2010, right? And they were 7-9 and 7-9 his first two seasons, and then they drafted Russell Wilson, and they've had 8 consecutive winning seasons since.
Yep.
Okay. So 2012 forward, 8 consecutive winning seasons. If you start at 2011 and work backwards, how far back in time do you have to go to get 8 winning seasons?
For Seattle?
Yes.
Not even consecutive, just a total of 8?
Total of 8.
Oh, man, it might be like the 70s.
It's 1990.
Oh, really? A little bit of success in there. Oh, well, they had like the Matt Hasselbeck stuff. I should have remembered that. Yeah.
Right. Okay. They had a 5-year stretch under Mike Holmgren with Matt Hasselbeck where they made the playoffs every single year and had 5 consecutive winning seasons.
Yeah, I overlooked that. I went all the way back to like Cortez Kennedy in the early 90s.
So, they were, and they even had a Pete Carroll's first year here, they won the division at 7-9. That was that year.
Did they real? Oh yeah. Man. So he starts off with 2 7-9s, one of them being a division championship. They won a playoff game that year, though.
Yeah, that was the Beastquake game.
That's right. Yes. Oh, that was one of the greatest plays in the history of life. Yes. Yeah, yes. I didn't even care that he was not even in a Bills uniform. Like, you just, you had no idea, no choice but to marvel at that run. So
what is interesting is you're seeing a bit of a regression with point differential. So it's I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, but 2010 through 2012 was an insane stretch of drafting for the Seahawks. And that 3-year stretch really built the foundation that won the Super Bowl, lost the Super Bowl, a couple of 10-win seasons. But still, statistically speaking, pretty impressive as far as total defense and total offense. And now they're kind of at a point where, like, the defense flatlined last year, so they're going to have to kickstart it. They're still scoring points at a healthy rate. But, like, they only had a plus 7-point differential. Compare that, they had 4 consecutive seasons of plus 140 in the mid, like, when they were playing in the Super Bowl. So we talk about this attrition with this roster and how it's kind of, you know, they're reaching maybe a tipping point with having missed and not having had success with some of their draft selections and whatnot. And it'll be interesting to see if that plot line for the next like 2 years, we continue to see that dip.
Kyle, are you a Frank Caliendo fan?
I am.
I can't get enough of the guy. He's recently started doing Bruce Arians.
Yes, he has. It's really funny.
Oh, man, I love it. And that's the next coach we're going to talk about with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I just read Bruce Arians' book. I really enjoyed that. It's one big flex, though. I'll say that. The dude just flexes on everything that he's accomplished, and I love it. That's his personality, so good for him. Man, it's an exciting time for Tampa Bay, and, I mean, that team got better last year. We remember last year, this summer, we talked about the Bucs, and, like, we thought it was, like, the most daunting, ridiculous schedule that an NFL team's ever faced, and they started a little rough, but they found their stride and finished 7-9. The defense really got a lot better under Todd Bowles and how he used that personnel. And you know, the front seven was rock solid. You couldn't run the football against that team. And some of those young pieces in the secondary started to grow. But I don't know if you heard, Kyle, but they got Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski this year. They pretty much brought everyone back on defense. And
they got some dudes.
Yeah, they do. I feel like this team is – this isn't – I've sometimes been able to smell it a little bit, like in the off season, where it's like, this doesn't add up like to winning. Like, I get the appeal, the buzz, why everyone's talking about it, but this doesn't add up to winning. I don't get that feel here with this Tampa Bay team.
Well, you look at what the team was able to do last year, and they're bringing a lot of continuity back. Obviously, quarterback change will be a big shift in difference, but like they're running it back defensively. And they had a lot of success defensively in the second half of last season once Jason Pierre-Paul got back on the field. And, you know, they brought back Sue and Shaq Barrett and, you know, really exciting, you know, second level of the defense with some good athletes. And replacing Quan Alexander with Devin White is a huge upgrade for the defense that they made in 2019. And, you know, they got young, long, athletic corners, and say what you will about, you know, their consistency week to week, it's still something they need to get a little bit better at to kind of help combat some of these elite wide receivers they're going to face week in and week out. But they had really bright flashes of play there. And so I agree with you in that I don't think this is an all hype and no substance kind of formula that we're going to see here for Tampa Bay with Bruce Arians. And his team started slow and they finished the year strong. So momentum, upgrades, and even the big pieces that they brought in with Brady and Gronk, like, these guys have chemistry together. They played together for a decade.
Yeah. Well, and this team last year at 7-9 had, you talked point differential with Seattle. They were +9 in point differential last year, despite the losing record. And Jameis Winston turnovers led to over 120 points for the opposition last year, brother. Like,
right.
You have to, like, just from the basic perspective of everything's the same. Just think that. But you go from Winston to a quarterback, and not even Tom Brady, right? But that is reality. You go from Winston to a quarterback that's only going to give the opposition 60 points. You know, 70.
Right.
I mean, they were making it happen despite those turnovers. Now, Jameis gave a lot too, right? Over 5,000 passing yards, over 30 touchdown passes, but he taketh away quite rapidly as well. I think just being able to stabilize that, but also, I mean, again, we're not just stabilizing, we're bringing in friggin' Tom Brady.
Right. Yeah, this is, and year two with the momentum that they have and all the excitement around the team, Bruce ain't going anywhere.
No.
This company and this organization is all in on Bruce Arians, and Bruce Arians is all in on, you know, the foreseeable, like, here and now. They're playing to win now. So if it doesn't go well, even if it, you know, they finish 9-7 or something like that, like, the resources that you've given indicates that Bruce Arians is going to have a chance to see his vision through.
67 years old, Mr. Bruce Arians turned 68 in October.
Pete Carroll is the NFL's oldest head coach.
So then Bruce is too, probably. I'm guessing, right?
67. I think Bill Belichick's too.
So they're like
Bill
right
Belichick's
in there.
Already. Bill Belichick is 8 months younger than Pete Carroll.
Okay. All right. Bruce Arians ice cold. Kyle, that's a streak of five, or is that four ice colds in a row? We've done.
Yeah, it got real boring here real quick. So.
No, so five in a row and eight of the last nine we've talked about. So
this
all right.
is a byproduct of what happens when every team, like, we've literally had half the NFL fired their coaches in the last 2 years.
Well, that's going to help for some, at least the opportunity to improve. Mike Vrabel, Tennessee Titans, had this team in the AFC championship game last year. He's what, 2 seasons in, 9-7, 9-7, if I'm not mistaken.
Not only that, the Tennessee Titans had 2 seasons before that with Coach Mike Mularkey, and they were 9-7 in both of those years as well.
Oh, geez. So they've had four consecutive 9-7 years.
Consecutive 9-7 seasons.
Mike Vrabel has gotten some success out of this football team. Let me tell you something about Mike Vrabel is he's not a very good game day coach. That's the biggest thing for him to improve upon in terms of situational management and his challenges. He's been very, I mean, those are two things that I think are directly tied to the head coach. There's variables that head coaches have to deal with that don't have anything to do with them that matter for the team's success. And that's why wins and losses and Super Bowl championships aren't always the best indicator of a good head coach. But there's things that coaches are responsible, and that's situational management and challenges. And Mike Vrabel has struggled in those two departments, but I love where this defense is. And offensively, I'm concerned that they're really a bit too all in on this Tannehill Henry thing, but it's working for him. And I think the team should be pretty happy with Mike Vrabel in general and large, despite some of the stuff I talked about.
Yeah. And he was 0 for 5 in challenges in 2018. He did improve to 60% hit rate, but he only threw 5 challenge flags in 2019. I agree with you in a prognosis of this team right now, in the sense that you have to feel really good about 2 consecutive 9-7 seasons. You feel like maybe you found a catalyst at the quarterback position. What's interesting for me is Tennessee literally decided this offseason, we are just going to run exactly what we had back.
Yep.
And the players that we lose, we're going to replace with our early draft picks. And that's going to be that, because they lost Jack Conklin at right tackle, and they drafted Isaiah Wilson in the first round. They lost Logan Ryan. They drafted Christian Fulton in the second round. They lost their backup running back, and they drafted Darrington Evans in the third round. They lost an interior defensive lineman, their Jarrell best Casey. Interior defensive lineman, in Jarrell Casey, and they drafted Laryl Murchison in the fifth round. It's like everywhere else on this team, it's like it's just chalk. It's like, all right, we're going to run it back exactly what we had last year. We're going to bet that the lightning in a bottle that we captured with Ryan Tannehill over the course of his starts for the season is going to be sustainable year over year. But like, are you really going to have Derrick Henry just be like Godzilla running over like small people game in and game out? And are you really going to bank on, when you get to the postseason, throwing for less than 100 yards per game and winning football games on the road? Like, I don't know. That's challenging for me. I will say this about Tennessee, though, Joe. They played 6 of their last 8 games, including the playoffs. They played on the road, and they won 4 of them.
They've got that, I mean, good defense, pound the football. Gives you a chance, right? I mean, but I think it gives you a chance to be right in that 7-9 win range. So, yeah, I mean, for the sake of the conversation, I don't think his seat is anything but ice cold. But I do think he's going to have to like evolve a bit. Yeah, you know, my biggest gripes are him is like punting the football in situations where it's like have some stones here, like be a little bit aggressive. You know, that was a situational type management I was referring to. And some of the times he was choosing to kick field goals, and it's like, keep your offense on the field and let's go. It's that stuff. That's going to be the difference between, you know, I think him showing the aggressiveness needed to really like go for it and challenge for double digit wins and get there. And, you know, I mean, it's hard to like throw too much shade at it because he got to the AFC Championship game, but I think the difference in him continuing to take that team to new places will be how he evolves as a coach.
I think that's a great, great way to put it, Joe. No risk it, no biscuit, right? So you can't play everything so close to the vest all the time and expect the ball to bounce your way every single time.
Right, right.
Okay, Ron Rivera.
Yep.
Year one, really accomplished head coach. I don't see any way this seat is anything other than ice cold as well. And I know that's a boring answer, but like, he's Ron Rivera, man. Like, Ron got a bad rap here the last 2 years in Carolina because he played, how many games did he play without his starting quarterback?
And how many games with an injured starting quarterback when he didn't need to be playing?
Right. So I think Ron's one of the more underrated head coaches in the league. And for Washington to pick him up and to be the guy who's going to kind of help their culture reset and kind of shift the perception of Washington as a football organization based on what it was when Bruce Allen was there, is this is such an upgrade for them. And I don't think it really matters what year one is like, because it's a culture install year.
Yeah. And it seems like they've given him quite a bit of control to really advance the team forward. I'll say this about Ron Rivera. Obviously, his teams in Carolina peaked in 2015 with a 15-1 year. Since that year, Cam Newton was never healthy again. And to me, that wasn't a team that was built for a one-year run. Like, they had Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis and Kawan Short and really solid defensive line across the board and like just this wonderful culture. From the injuries to Cam Newton, and Greg Olsen, obviously a historic stretch there as well. The injuries to Cam Newton, the Bills plucking, you know, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, They can never keep things afloat from that period forward. And I really think, you know, we probably don't talk enough about how that 15-1 team, that wasn't a 1 year team. There were things that happened that prevented them from having a longer run. And you know, here we are, he gets fired after 12 games in 2019 after going with a losing record three of the next four seasons. But I still believe in Ron Rivera as a head coach in the league. Right. And I think he's perfect for Washington.
And let's not sleep on the fact that, like, they struggled the last 2 years with all of the issues with Cam's health and whatnot, and they were still only 12-16.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Ron Rivera, super underrated head coach. Joe, as you said, some dynamics there after the peak in 2015 that really kind of hurt if you just look at it on paper. But Ron's the right guy for this job, and I don't see him going anywhere. So that's going to do it for us today on Draft Dudes. We thank you guys for listening throughout the course of this week. We hope you like what we had to say about your team's head coach. If not, please submit all complaints to Joe and not to me.
Benjamin Solak.
Yeah, to Benjamin Solak. He is at the Joe Marino. I'm at Grinding the Tape. Hope you guys enjoy your weekend. Come on back. See us again on Monday. Signing off for the weekend. Thanks for listening to the Draft Dudes podcast.